The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, the latest Exchequer figures tell us the tax take is buoyant, thus adding to our already heavily laden coffers. We can spend, spend, spend. But that's a bit like splurging with the money in your wallet or your purse while you have a huge mortgage to pay off. The advice? Cut the expensive daily lattes and designer sandwiches and keep that money in your wallet for paying down your debt. But does that apply to the individual? Yes. Does it also apply to governments and countries? Well, we're joined by economist Colm McCarthy, and I'm wondering if he's channeling Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Fezziwig from A Christmas Carol this morning. Colm, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Fezziwig?
Well, the government set up an organisation a good few years ago called the Fiscal Council, and they appointed some very knowledgeable and experienced people to sit on it, and they hired staff. And their job is to give an independent view from time to time on what is the position of the public finances. And they have been grumbling for a while that we don't have loads of money, although tax revenue is very strong, because we have loads and loads of debt.
How much do we owe?
At 230 billion.
Now, historically, how does that compare to what we might have owed before?
Okay. First of all, the government has financial liabilities, which are essentially debts that have to be financed and interest paid on them and so on. They also have some financial assets. So if you subtract the financial assets, the net is 190 billion or something of that order. Mm. Relative to the tax base, that's a fair amount. And the trouble is, if things get dodgy and if the economy slows down for whatever reason, you would like to be able to spend a bit of money, as we did during COVID, for example, and as we were unable to do after the banking bust.
Now, when we had that big crash, how did we cut? Because a lot of people, like social welfare programs, were not particularly cut, as I recall.
Most of them. There were cuts in child benefit. The rate of child benefit was cut. Public service pay rates were cut. But nearly all the principal social transfer programs were not actually cut. And indeed, they didn't even fall in real terms because the inflation rate was zero for a while. So the popular perception that there was, you know, cutting and slashing.
I mean, a lot of people lost jobs, which was the real cut in their personal lives.
That was the real cut. And the government was unable to support the economy in those years because they had been too fly-hoolock with the money in the years
before. So there was no rainy day fund, or there wasn't much of one.
Well, it's not the rainy day funds that matter. It's the net indebtedness of the state. And the people who lend money to governments, when they get a little bit nervous, which they're not at the moment, but they get nervous every now and again, what they look at is how much do these guys owe and how much liquid assets do they actually have?
Because we should remind people that we rarely pay off the capital. We keep rolling over
and getting
good deals at low interest rates for long-term debt. That's our plan, isn't it?
Yeah, never. Government borrowing never has to be literally repaid, but it has to be refinanced all the time. So each year, a certain amount of the outstanding debt matures and it has to be refinanced. So you have to reborrow it, but you have to reborrow it at today's interest rates.
Yeah. So the NTMA is always on the lookout for the best deals they can in terms of what they borrow.
Yeah, and they have been reasonably adroit over the years in lengthening the term of a lot of Irish government debt so that there isn't a huge amount that falls to be refinanced shortly. But over a few years, that does begin to happen. And the trouble is you're going to be refinancing at higher interest rates than you initially borrowed at. But to go back to your earlier question, how did we do the financial adjustment after the crash in 2010, 11, 12? We were unable to borrow from anybody in the year 2010. The Irish government couldn't borrow a penny, and they had to go to the IMF and get bailed out. First time that ever happened in the history of the state. It was also only 15 years ago. You'd imagine it was 300 years ago, listening to some
people. So some people have, memories are short.
They have very short memories. But in any event, an awful lot of the adjustment in the years 2011, 12, 13, 14, was they took the hatchet to the capital programme. And the volume of public capital investment, which means housing, roads, schools, water, all that kind of stuff, the national public capital programme was cut in half in volume terms in just 4 years.
And we pay the price now.
And people go on about, isn't it terrible Ireland has an infrastructure deficit? Well, where do you think it came from? What happened was that faced with the need to get the public finances in order in a hurry, the politicians just took the hatchet to the capital programme. And it is not true that there were huge cuts in government current spending and so on. There were increases in taxes now. That's where USC came from, for example.
Temporary tax?
Yeah. Well, all income tax has been temporary since the Napoleonic Wars.
Now, going back to your infrastructure point, I remember around that time there was an offer from a Spanish company to build the Dublin Metro at what seemed like a rock-bottom price.
Yeah.
And talk of we could go to the European Investment Bank and get the money and and get people working and get the whole thing rolling, which might have helped the economy and might have kept certain kind of trades and workers in the Irish economy who fled elsewhere and haven't come back. But we didn't do that. We didn't take that opportunity because we hadn't the recs.
Well, I think some people weren't enthusiastic, you know. What we did around that time, actually, was we built a tunnel to the airport. It's called the Dublin Port Tunnel, and it's full of buses all day. So the idea that we should borrow now 10 billion and go off and build a tunnel to the airport rather ignores the fact that we already have one that's built and paid for. So the case, the objective case for building extra capacity to Dublin Airport and onto Swords has not been convincingly made, in my view. I don't think it's a priority.
Now, one of the issues, of course, is that if you have a permanent way that's dedicated to rail, you can look at any metro in the world or any rapid transit that's dedicated with its own permanent way, rather than interfacing with the traffic like the Lewis does, you can move a lot more people a lot more quickly than, you know, a stream of buses.
Yeah. As a general rule, on-street trams, if they have a dedicated and exclusive right-of-way and underground railways and so on, do give you that advantage. But they're very expensive. And what we've managed to do in Dublin, I always try and put it this way, we've managed to build a sprawling, low-density city that stretches halfway to Athlone and Port Leisure and all the rest of it. And we're now obsessed with underground railways and projects like that, which are phenomenally expensive and which would have made sense had we not committed the sin of building such a low-density city. And you just don't get the payback in a low-density city that you do. People keep going on about, oh, I was in Paris and they have a great metro, and I was in London and have a great metro. Yeah, fine. This is not Paris. It's not London. And we have committed an important sin, namely we did not plan urban density intelligently in the greater Dublin area. We've let the city sprawl, and that has consequences.
Now, Colm, then your advice to the incoming government who look at the in the wallet and the purse, not so much in the bank vault, and they'll see all this cash swilling around, coming in from all sorts. What would you say, what should they do with that cash?
It actually doesn't matter what you do with it. What they've been doing recently is inventing a fund. And so we're going to put this as if they would take the money and put it in a drawer and lock the drawer and so on. It actually doesn't matter. The net debt reduces if you run budget surpluses of its own volition. It doesn't matter what you do with it. So what they've decided to do is to ask the NTMA, who are meant to manage the debt, to manage these assets. And they're going to go off and invest the money in presumably international equities and stuff like that. It actually doesn't matter if they just leave it in the bank. To go back to your analogy, if you have a great big personal mortgage and you're a bit worried about it, say you owe $500,000 to the bank for a mortgage, and you're not dead sure you're going to be working and all that, if you suddenly win 10 or 20 grand on the horses or on the lotto or something, the wise thing to do is to pay off a bit of the mortgage. Once you do that, it doesn't matter what you invest the money in, so to speak, as long as you get the net debt down.
So you're saying that if we had a few billion knocking around the place, say 20 billion, that they're looking for a home for, you'd be better off taking it off the debt. And therefore, it means that our annual repayments in interest would go down?
Yeah. And it's what you would recommend one of your relatives to do if they were in that situation. And in terms of medium-term financial management, that is what the government has been advised to do by the Fiscal Council and by various other people.
Now, what do you think they're going to do? Are they going to just try to build houses, put the water infrastructure, do the catch-up on the infrastructure deficit?
Well, throwing money at housing has been tried with great energy in recent years, and we're not getting there. The problem with housing is that I think it's the biggest single deficit. The problem with housing is that houses have to be built somewhere. And if you proceed on the basis that local authorities have a veto, and all local authorities think that we should have more housing but not here, then you end up with nimbyism. And Ireland is now stuck in a planning system which has devolved the veto power to the people most likely to use it, namely local councillors.
Yeah, but the problem also is that consistently ministers in reforming planning have run away from a rules-based system where everyone would know if it's in this area, it's going to be 12 stories. If it's in this area, it's going to be 4 stories, blah, blah, blah. The roads have got to be so wide. There's got to be a cycle lane. There's got to be a shop. You know, if you're going to build, this is what you've got to do.
There's a further problem that I've noticed in more recent years. NIMBYism was born somewhere on the south side of Dublin. Where people thought, I don't want any more housing around here and I don't want any more traffic and so on and so forth. It has now been adopted throughout rural Ireland. You now cannot put a letterbox on the main street in some of the provincial towns, and people are objecting to water supply improvements. They're objecting to pylons, which are essential if we're going to recover the electricity system, and so on. So NIMBYism has now become a truly national movement.
Colin McCarthy, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.